Hello, everyone. It's Jules.
And Jen.
And
you're listening to Trans in the South. It's been a while since we did this, obviously.
It's been a good while. I don't know that we've had a lot on our minds, but I have a few things on my mind, and I wonder if we could talk about them.
Well, let's do that.
The first thing I want to mention is that a little bit of a anniversary for me. A few days ago, it was a year and a half since I had my vaginoplasty.
Yay!
And coincidentally, it was a year and a half, or give or take a day, since I've had an orgasm.
Not yay.
I take issue with that, and that's what I want to talk about.
Okay.
The first thing I want to say to everybody, and especially them and their intimate partners who is considering vaginoplasty, I am a tiny fraction of a percent of the people who have vaginoplasties. As I understand it, almost everybody has them. So don't think that because somebody you've heard on a podcast it has this experience that it's likely to happen to you. It is absolutely not.
Yeah, it's very rare.
It's very rare. But the other thing I wanted to say is I have come increasingly to realize that like anything else in life, it is not helpful, at least to me, to construct an ideal and get disappointed if I don't live up to it. I'm not saying we shouldn't have goals. Goals are fine. But being disappointed at not living up to it, not every meal has to be the best meal you ever had. And not every sexual experience has to be, you know, this fake thing you see in porn. And I've always had, or at least for a long time, I've had a very romanticized version in my head of what a sexual encounter should be like. And the absence of an orgasm does not interfere with that picture. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
On what part?
Oh, well, I mean, on the fact that the absence of an orgasm does not necessarily detract from a sexual experience.
Yeah, for a while it definitely did for me. I mean, if it was me, I would be really upset. I mean, I've gone through like periods of being unable to have an orgasm due to medication stuff. And it's just, for me, it's like needing to sneeze and not being able to. And it just feels really bad. But as your partner, I had to realize that A, my experience is not your experience. My idea of what you're experiencing is not what you're experiencing. So I had to listen to you.
Right.
And B, I had to trust that when you said, I feel good and you make me feel good and that is sufficient for me, I had to trust that that was true. Even though I couldn't understand it, I had to trust that that was the truth.
Well, I may have mentioned on this podcast before that I knew before I had surgery that if having a vaginoplasty meant I would never have an orgasm again, I wouldn't hesitate to get the vaginoplasty.
Yeah, I remember you saying that beforehand.
And I still feel that way. The relative importance of orgasms to me, just to me, feeling comfortable in this body, they're incomparable, the difference between those two. Now, I'm sure that most trans women, maybe the vast majority of trans women, not only have not had vaginoplasties, but have no plans ever to have a vaginoplasty. That's their deal. And that's fine. This is not, you know, obviously what I'm talking about. I was just dysphoric enough that that was pretty much an imperative for me.
Yeah, it was really hard for us to have sex. We couldn't shower together.
Right.
Yeah. We could hardly get dressed in the same room. Like,
yeah, it was really hard. I was unable to be unclothed.
Yeah.
I was unable to be naked around you and fully naked. And it was really difficult. And now I'm just so comfortable in my body. And compared to that, orgasm is just absolutely nothing. And that is a tribute in large part to you, I should say.
Oh.
because the sexual experience, my sexual experience with another lesbian and having a vagina myself is just, I've so fully immersed myself in that experience that the pleasure I derive from that is just far more than anything I ever felt before.
And I think we should clarify that it's not that you're not able to feel pleasure.
I feel amazing physical pleasure. I feel more physical pleasure than I would say I ever did before. You know, you might stack up the three best orgasms I ever had against what I now feel on a regular basis when I have sex.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Damn.
Because that orgasm, in part, because that amazing orgasm lasts a total of what? 4 to 15 seconds or something. Yeah, you get that afterglow afterwards. But, you know, now, especially as a woman, that sex goes on and on and on and on. And you only stop because you have other things you want to do. And it's also very intense. It's almost a spiritual experience for me now. So it really is.
That means so much to me.
Well, I'm glad. And so I just wanted to say, and this is a segue into another thing I wanted to talk about. I think we shortchange ourselves. I'm not saying we shouldn't try to have an orgasm. And of course, they often please our partners in a different way, but to the same extent that they please us very often. And I get that. And the set it up as a thing without which sex has no meaning. That may be true for many people. It may be true for some people. It's not true for all people because it's not true for me. And I think there are probably other people for whom orgasm is not the be-all and end-all, is not what sex is necessarily all about.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Wait. I want to talk a little bit about what it's like when your partner is this way and how you might feel psychologically. Like the other side of it is, I feel like I'm not good enough. So sometimes you can feel like a bad lover. You can feel like you're just not doing it right. And if you can just try harder, or if they would just let you try for as long as you wanted, or, you know, if they would just put some effort into it, maybe on their own, that they could just get there. And then that need that you have could be fulfilled. But really, you need to put aside that need, because if they're happy, then that is really all that matters. I mean, if someone at the end of a sexual encounter says that they're satisfied, that's the end goal. I mean, if they're, you know, as long as they're being truthful. And so that was kind of a journey that we had to go through therapy and talking about stuff and me journaling and just like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to learn that. And now that that's really not like a thing that we worry about, we just kind of have sex however we want and enjoy it. And then whenever we stop, we stop. And you usually let me know when you're ready to stop.
Yeah. There's a kind of a theme on TikTok that suggests, at least with lesbians, that there's no logical endpoint. But I think we reach endpoints.
Yeah, I think we do.
Certainly, sex takes many, many, many times as long, in my experience, as when there's a man involved, at least for the man. I have not found it to be endless. That's not really what I came on to talk about.
Really? Because we've talked about it for 12 minutes already.
Yeah, 12 minutes, and it's going to be edited down to 2.5. I wanted to talk briefly about passing.
You mean like when you're on the highway and you put your blinker on and then someone won't let you go into the other lane?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Or
like, no. If you're on the soccer pitch and then you want your teammate to get the ball to you.
For those of you in the gallery, I'm rolling my eyes.
I think they're further back in your head than they're supposed to go.
You know, passing is not new with trans people. People have been passing. People in what you will call underclasses or oppressed classes have been passing since there were oppressed classes, I expect. I learned when I was pretty young of African-Americans passing as white, and I really have no experience personal with that, of course, and I'm not going to be talking about that. I am going to be talking about passing as a transgender person, or of course, in my case, as not passing. I've been giving a lot of thought to it. I admittedly have the luxury of having a large support group of people, old friends, new friends, family, who accept me for who I am. And I live in an area where that's possible. I run in a circle where that's possible. And that is certainly true. But Phyllis, just as a kind of a philosophical matter, just as a way of thinking about passing, it seems to me that passing constitutes an acceptance. Why do we want to pass? Why do we want to pass?
It's a good question.
And I think we want to pass because we want to be accepted as the gender that we know we are. But I think more than that, most of the time when we say we want to pass, we really want to pass as a cisgender person. Now, I'm not saying everybody wants to pass once that. And certainly there are a lot of people who don't care if they pass. I would like to pass, I suppose, but I never had any real idea that that was going to happen. What I want to be is accepted as who I and what I am.
That's, in other words, treated like a woman, even if people know that you're trans.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And what that has come to mean to me, what I believe for me that means is I have to accept deep down in my soul that a trans woman is no less a woman than a cis woman. And I know we all believe that on our skin, and we believe it an inch in, but to believe it in your heart can be a difficult thing to me.
I think for most people, because that's how we were socialized.
That's right.
And now people are being socialized differently, which is awesome.
Absolutely, it's awesome. And perhaps the need to pass will abate, as I think the need to pass has probably over time abated for some African Americans who otherwise in an earlier day may have, that may have been important.
For them to pass as white, you mean?
For them to pass as white.
That's a safety thing, too. And I think that's true for trans people,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, it is. And I agree with that 100%. And I would never say, don't stay safe. I would never suggest that. And people are going to stay safe. Staying safe, obviously, is a bottom line thing. But I have gotten to the point where I believe I have to accept myself fully as a trans woman. And to do that, I have to let go of the idea that passing, the need to pass, is important for people to think that I'm a cis woman.
Or that you're a real woman.
In order to be a woman, I have to be cis.
Right.
And part of this is, you know, we mix up the idea of what do we believe or what do we think other people believe. And maybe they won't accept us as trans, or they would accept us as cis. But I think it's in the long run, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, it is incumbent on us. Because if we're not going to take care of ourselves, who is going to take care of us? It is incumbent on us to normalize, if that's the word, the idea that a trans woman is 100% as much a woman as a cis woman. A trans man is 100% as much a man as a trans man. I guess non-binary has not come into my thought as thinking through this. But what I want to get away from is the idea of passing as an acknowledgement of the theory that a cis woman is more of a woman than a trans woman. Mm. And I wanted to come here and say that because I mean, I'm sure 1,000 people have thought of this before me, but we have audiences, everyone knows, in the tens of millions. I don't know what our audience is, if it's one person or 1,000 people. I know we have some people listening to us because we hear from them.
Two people at least.
At least two.
And if you'd like us to know you're listening, you can email us at transinthesouthpod@gmail.com.
But I would like to get this normalized. And I'm not saying we shouldn't try to pass. That's up to the individual person. I'm just saying, let's think about why we want to pass, why it's important for us to pass, and I'm not saying go around telling everybody you're trans. I'm just saying I have come to the conclusion that I'm no longer, if I ever did, I have no desire to pass because I am proud of who I am. That's what I have to say.
I like that.
Let me ask you this. As a non-binary person, do you have, is this raise any thoughts about in the non-binary world? I guess non-binary people, is there a passing? Do non-binary people need to pass as non-binary?
Yeah,
I haven't really given it
absolutely.
A thought.
There's a whole movement of non-binary people don't owe you androgyny. It's a big thing in the community.
Right.
Because the ideal non-binary person, quote unquote, is indistinguishable between genders. You look at them and you go, I have no idea what they were assigned at birth.
I see. And so that's what you're striving for.
That is in the way that a woman strives for a model's body.
Right.
In that way that is unattainable.
Right.
That is the idealized toxic culture version.
Right.
And that's really not at all what most non-binary people look like. And a lot of us pass as our assigned gender or take hormones and pass as the opposite or other gender. And it's confusing for people because if you don't look androgynous, they're like, what do you mean you use they, them pronouns?
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm struggling with that now, like with my hair. Now that it's longer, it's like, have I fully given in to just straight up looking like just like a normal lady and then being like, oh, by the way, on the inside, though, I use these weird pronouns. I feel like it was easier to communicate when I was letting my eyebrows grow and keeping my hair in like a more traditional men's style and wearing my binder and all that. But I love being feminine. Sometimes I really like it. So, I mean, I want to be able to express that. There's kind of a culture of wanting to look like a flamboyant gay man feminine in that way rather than like a Barbie doll sort of feminine.
Yeah. You've mentioned that in the past.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really stupid to divide non-binary people up into AFAB and AMAB non-binary because you're just creating a false binary.
Right.
But I hear that a lot among AFAB people. That's what they want. So, yeah, there's definitely a passing thing where when you're trans, binary trans, then what you want is to make sure that people know when they look at you what gender to assign you to what pronouns to use for you.
And I clearly do that. And
you do.
But I have to say this. I am dressing mostly for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dressing how I feel. But, you know, I was just in the process of saying that. But there have been times when I have felt as though maybe I wanted to go a little bit more masculine today. And I haven't. I've shied away from that.
Really?
Yeah, you and I have discussed sometimes you say to me, you know, that shirt gives off a little bit more of a masculine vibe
mm-hmm.
than you want it to. So you pick up on how I want to present. So I do, I let that concern about presentation affect how I want to present sometimes. Most of the time, I dress and present the way I feel inside, which is much more on the feminine side. I wouldn't call it girly. I'm not Elle Woods. For those of you who are under 25 or something, go look it up. Elle Woods.
Legally Blonde.
Legally Blonde. But certainly, I guess I let social expectations push me around a little bit.
Yeah, because there's a way that you want to be treated. And when you're in certain spaces,
right.
You know, like when we went out to the theater,
yeah,
the first time we went, you had more, a little more masculine clothes on and somebody mispronounced you, which hasn't happened in forever.
That's true. I had thought of that.
And since then, I've been kind of watching to see what you would do next time we went.
I mean, if they were going by the top I was wearing, I had a bracelet. I had a necklace. I had earrings.
You were wearing your jacket and could not see all like any of that.
Hey.
I'm just saying, like, it was all covered up.
Well, whatever. I'm here to say is that I do let expectations push me around a little bit. And I think we'd all like not to do that. I think a lot of people are more successful at it than I am. But on the other hand, I have pretty feminine feelings, so.
Yeah, you do.
That's all. That's really all I want to talk about. I'd love to hear from anybody in our audience who has thoughts about this, because we're getting kind of really more into maybe the kind of thing I wanted to talk about when we started this podcast. You know, we were going to talk about things to make us all think a little bit. And we ended up doing the first, I don't know, 12, 15, 20 or more episodes on, you know, the journey of a physical body change.
Which is not necessary, and anyone who doesn't do it is still totally valid.
Yeah, totally valid. There. And I think, I just think that's so delightful. It's just another case of not letting ourselves be intimidated by cultural expectations.
And I think it's great. I think it's hot. You know, I love different things that are outside of the norm.
Yeah.
I love that shit.
Yeah. Of course you do. You're non-binary.
I'm kicking her under the covers.
Yeah. Anyway, we can talk about more later on, but I wanted to mention this whole concern I had about passing, about needing to pass.
Yeah, I think that it only really is a big deal. Well, first, when you're first coming out, it's very scary and you don't do it well. And there's so much to learn.
So much to learn and so much to unlearn.
Yeah, absolutely. It just all feels really fake and contrived and weird for a bit.
Yeah.
And then it's all you can think about is passing successfully. But then once you get more settled, it's like you can be a little more free.
You can. And you have more options once you're settled. I remember kind of a long time ago, when I first started going on the internet looking at the transgender experience, which is when I first got onto the internet. Internet was all about being transgender to me when I first really started understanding the internet. It's like, okay, I can be anybody I want now. Anyway, so I was on there, and when I first started dressing, it was dresses and skirts. And I remember looking at a trans woman, and she was in jeans and a t-shirt, and she looked fabulous. And I thought, that is the day that I will be free, when I don't have to wear a dress or a skirt to feel feminine enough. And it was. And I wear jeans most of the time. Now I feel really comfortable in jeans and a top of some sort. I think you just fall into a style that's you. And I love that.
Or if you're me, you just fall into a style that's you every 6 months. And then you have to buy a whole new wardrobe. And then you're like, actually, no, I'm going to be really masculine now. Throw out the girl pants.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
We should just take them up to the attic or something.
Bring them down next time.
Yeah. It's like when you have kids who get tired, you know, little kids.
Yeah.
They get tired of the old toys and you put them away in a box somewhere and then bring them out a year later. And they think, oh, new toys.
Okay. Anyway, I think that's all that I had to say on it.
Yeah, that's all I have to say.
Okay, please email us. We're lonely.
Yeah.
Tell us something.
Okay. Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.